Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, and welcome once again to History Dweebs. I am Tim. Welcome to the podcast where we take a lighthearted look at the dark side of history. And the topic of our podcast today is checking out early, the Wyckoff Hotel fire. Wyckoff Hotel was a very nice, luxurious hotel in Atlanta, Georgia, and caught on fire back in 1946 and claimed 119 lives. So we're going to talk about this disaster. But before we do, let me remind everyone that we are a comedy podcast and we use adult language. So if adult language offends you,
go. Don't let the door hit you in the ass on your way out. And
well, that wasn't exactly what I was going to. Yeah.
We're definitely.
We attempt. And
we make a weak attempt at comedy.
A futile attempt at comedy. But if you know, comedy is not your thing or you're offended by adult language, and check out one of the other fine podcasts out there, such as Renee's Time Machine. It's a new one, Chuck.
Yeah, it is. That's a good one.
It's a history podcast, serious history podcast, and Renee does a great job with it. It's called Renee's Time Machine. It's available on iTunes, so please check that out if you like history. If you like true crime, then check our friends out with They Walk Among Us. And if you like...
They have a really good episode this week.
They always have a good episode.
I know. Why I'm saying that.
I know. They always do such... And they're up again. They're up for an award again. The British Podcast Awards, along with our friends at Slaughter. They both are up for the British Podcast Awards. So good luck to Ben and Rosanna.
And our friends at Bloody Murder.
Oh, yeah. Are they?
They're up for an Australian award.
Oh, an Australian award. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I really like Bloody Murder. Tara does such a good job.
We just had Erica Kelly from Southern Fried.
There's so many good podcasts out there. I don't know why anyone.
Southern Fried True Crime.
I don't know why anyone listens to this one. There's so many good ones out there.
So they can mock us on the other ones.
Yeah, we do offer, we set the bar, very low.
We set the bar so other people can achieve.
Tim. Yeah, can go right over us.
Now, we do have. I will say, if you're in the mood for more serious fare,
yes,
Timmy,
yes,
then tune in. Look up Dead Ball.
Yes, that's our.
We do some fine work on that one.
Yeah, it's a good podcast. It's on baseball history and tragedies.
But it's human interest. It's not necessarily baseball.
Yeah, we cover a lot of stories about tragedies and baseball players who die young, that sort of thing. And if you're interested in current events and public policy and stuff like that, check out Rants and Reasons with our good friend Karen, the lovely Karen Garrett, and you, Chuck.
Yeah.
And you guys just had a new one out on drugs.
We are going to do the war on drugs in about 4 episodes, Timmy.
Oh, good. A lot. You can never go wrong talking about drugs.
No. No, I like drugs.
I know you do.
Drugs good.
They are. Helps you with all
As
your...
As I said on our last episode, Timmy.
Viagra is good.
If loving Xanax is wrong, I don't want to be right.
Oh, dude, I told you my doctor took me off of Xanax, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't that bad. I thought... Because, you read all these horror stories about being...
People go crazy.
Yeah, being
benzoids. But, those people, if you took them off licorice, they'd have the same
shit. Yeah, I think you're right. So I was like all freaked out because, you know, it gives you, like, I was looking it up on the internet, and there's all this shit that's going to, all these things you're going to go through seizures, once you start withdrawing. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Shit yourself.
Yeah, you're fucking, yeah.
Your eyesight. Yeah. You're going to become a cripple. and I'll tell you just...
And I don't want to make light. I know people use it and they have to use it. I don't want to make light of it. It just I didn't experience, thank God, any terrible withdrawals from it.
When I went through an extremely, extremely stressful time to me, I was taking ungodly amounts. And it was prescribed to me.
Uh-huh.
And my doctor said, when the situation resolves, it's when my brother was sick. And
right.
He said, when your brother dies, what you're going to find is you're taking less and less and less. You'll just wean yourself off. I'm not worried about that.
Right.
I did.
Yeah.
I did. I'm cured.
You're cured, man. I don't know. I don't know if I'd go that far. I still see you carrying around those Xanax bottles. So.
Well, you know, they're handy to have around for the days that the devil drives you.
But see,
makes you want to climb the tower.
That's situational stress. Right. Brandy is in herself situational stress.
She's a carrier, Timmy. She's a carrier. She's ground zero. Patient zero for stress.
Yeah. She is. Brandy, unfortunately, is not with us today.
Well, unfortunate for you.
Well, I know. Yeah, but our listeners like Brandy. Or they say they do. Maybe they're just being nice. But
oh, they're being nice.
But Brandy, unfortunately, had some other stuff she had to do today. So we had to make a decision on whether to record today without her or not record at all this week. So we thought we would go ahead and record. So you're stuck with me and the Colonel today. I am happy to introduce the most dangerous man in podcasting today. And see, I'm not going to get interrupted because Brandy always interrupts me and casts dispersions on your titles and things.
She's insecure to me.
The man who is known as the moral compass of our podcast, a man who is known as an oasis in the desert of despair, the very honorable, the Colonel, the Reverend Colonel Charles Beauregard Hawk Waters III, affectionately known as the Southern Gentleman. How are you today, Colonel?
Couldn't be better, Timmy. Couldn't be better.
Things going well. I know you have a big weekend planned.
Things going well. Just, not a big weekend, just some low-key shopping and whatnot.
You and your wife are going out of town, the lovely Renee.
And we're hopefully be back Sunday.
Okay.
And, you know, the world will be back to...
Will you be fornicating this weekend?
No.
No. No. No. No. Just shopping.
She'll wear me down with shopping.
I see.
Wear me down.
See, you always do the fornication first so you get that in, because after they take you shopping, then you're wiped out. You don't feel like it.
Well, I'm thinking about getting a new phone, Timmy.
Oh, really?
I had it with Apple.
Well, no, wait a minute. Let me go back. Because the other day you were telling me what sparse kind of lifestyle you lead and that you don't even need a phone.
I don't need a phone, but if I'm going to have a phone, I want a phone where the goddamn battery don't go dead in 10 minutes.
I know, right?
Yeah.
They can create, you know what, here.
They can send a man to the Mars, but they can't make they send a man to Mars?
No, they haven't, but okay. You know. Here's the thing. I mean, Steve Jobs died. And so apparently Apple has some limitations.
Yeah.
Because he's dead. So
now they just don't give a shit. It's like,
well, the thing is dead. Yeah, exactly.
While the boss is dead, the cats will play.
But they'll create every new, you know, when they get a new upgrade, they'll tell you they've got, you know, a new camera with, you know, 4 million pixels or whatever. But the battery still sucks.
Yeah.
I know. I can't. Yeah, I need to upgrade my phone soon as well.
What version you got?
I think I have 6S.
Yeah, so you need to upgrade it for $29 now for the battery.
Oh, just the battery.
Because
I needed
it. This whole
so you're just getting the battery, or you're getting a new phone?
No, I think I'm going to go with the Pixel, Timmy. The new Pixel.
Oh, okay.
Thing. Because Logan told me it was cool.
The new camera.
Yeah.
With that. Okay. Well, I will have to. I'm going to have to get a new phone too, because I get a little nervous when my battery gets low. Anything under 50%, I get a little anxious. But I don't need a Xanax.
Yeah.
Let's get into this story. Like I said, unfortunately, Brandy's not here. I want to give a shout out to Leanne, my good friend, who, as you know, Colonel, has the softest hair in probably all of Great Britain. I would think.
Now there's a lot of great. There's some Brits over there, and I don't know. Can we are we lumping Nicola and Rosanna?
Oh, yeah. They have lovely hair as well. Mm-hmm. But
Rosanna's a ginger now. So.
Well, I'm, what does that have to? She can still have soft hair.
I know. I'm just saying she's a ginger.
Oh, is it, you wouldn't touch it is
if
what
you
you're saying.
If you touch it, yeah, it'll burn your hand.
I see. I see. Okay. So a shout out to the lovely Leanne and to Rosanna. And that Ben and Rosanna are doing well. Okay, let me tell you about this hotel since we've been rambling. The 1946 Wyckoff Hotel Fire in Atlanta, Georgia is the deadliest hotel fire in U.S. history, claiming 119 lives and injuring many more back in 1946.
You know what? That was lucky they didn't have Yelp back then.
You think they might have got a bad review or two?
You figure one dead person, they probably got 10 relatives.
Oh, yeah.
That's going to be a lot of bad reviews.
That's 100 bad reviews on Yelp. Many of the victims, Colonel, were forced to jump to their death to escape the fire.
Hold on.
Yeah. Well, you have to make a call there. You know, the fire is blazing and it's, you know, within inches of you. So you have to make a decision where you're going to stay and be burned alive or jump. So many of these decided to jump.
It's really about how you land, Timmy. You got to drop and roll.
I'm not sure if you're landing on concrete. I'm not sure how that helps. But anyway, back in the 1940s, the Wyckoff Hotel was considered the jewel of the Atlanta skyline. I came across this story. I went to, I was in Atlanta back last fall, and I went to a museum there. And in the museum, they had a display of this exhibit of the hotel fire and the story. So that's where I got the idea to do this. And this hotel was really a big deal. It was set across the street of the Lowe's Grand Movie Theater. Mm-hmm. And that theater is where they held the world debut of Gone with the Wind in 1939. Yeah. So, I mean, this was a big deal. The hotel was 15 stories. It was the tallest building in Atlanta at the time of this fire. And it was considered Atlanta's most luxurious hotel. They had a lot of famous people who had stayed there at one time or the other. The hotel was built by William Wyckoff. They started in 1911 and completed it in 1913. The structure was brick. The floors were numbered 1 to 16, but excluded, you know, the 13th floor. A lot of hotels do that, don't they? Mm-hmm. Buildings in general. And they wouldn't have a 13th floor, they never used the room number 13 either. So there was 13 was never in the building. It was its center core were two enclosed elevators and that opened to a T-shaped stairway. It was built utilizing the building codes of 1911. Now, the problem was, you know, once they built, or at least back in the day when they built these high-rise hotels or office buildings or whatever, they always would go by the codes of that time, naturally. So later when they're inspected, based upon the codes when they were built, right?
Yeah.
So this thing was built in 1911. Now, this fire occurred in 1946, so that's 35 years of changes in building codes, but this hotel just went by the original codes. Now, at the time it was built, it was considered fireproof at the time.
Jesus, like the Titanic, like every other place.
Every other
as
disaster.
As soon as you say... And you could be in a place that's never had a tornado before. And as soon as you say, you know what, it's built to withstand a tornado and an earthquake, you're going to have a tornado and an earthquake the same day.
Yeah.
Why do people say shit like that?
I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
It's like our podcast. We're guaranteed in our podcast not to get good reviews. So let's test that.
We're bad review proof.
Yeah. Yeah. But anyway, it has steel frame. It was protected. But the thing was, it was fireproof. At the time, that term was used by insurance companies to, and it meant only that the building wouldn't collapse in the event of fire. It wasn't meant to say that the building could not catch on fire, only that it wouldn't collapse. It was on, you know, a little nitpicky there, but it was, you know, if you go by that definition, it was fireproof. Now, the building was, to tell you a little bit about it, they made an attempt to make the building fire resistant. However, there were no automatic sprinkler. There was no automatic sprinkler system. There were no fire doors, no exterior fire escapes. However,
so they didn't try. They didn't try all that damn hard.
It was still, by 1911 standards, it was considered within code, right? Now, the owner of this building, the guy who built this building, was a guy named William Wyckoff. They named the building after him. William Wyckoff and his wife, Grace. They owned a building. They built it. And they were, ironically enough, William and Grace Wyckoff were really concerned about with the threat of fire because they had a mansion in, on Peachtree. Every fucking thing is Peachtree in Atlanta. Yeah. You know, every street, everything. But anyway, they had a mansion in Peachtree Circle, very nice area of town. And their mansion caught on fire, and it was totally destroyed. They almost died in this fire, and that happened on December 8, 1913. So when, as they were building this hotel, they experienced this terrible fire. So the couple were very insistent on the builders making this hotel fireproof because they had such a, you know, traumatic experience with their home burning down. Now, so when they built this building in 1913, once it was built, the Wyckoffs moved into this building because they're so, it was nice and modern, and they were assured by the builders that it was fireproof. But again, it's the definition of fireproof. Now, they made a poor decision in moving on into a room on the 16th floor. And I know you, Charles, know why it's a bad idea.
To move to the 16th floor?
Yeah.
Because the fire department can only reach up to the 11th floor, Timmy.
Yes. So
once you get past the 11th floor, with all the technology we got, they can't help you.
That's today. Even today, right? Yeah. It's not even, you know, just something that was limited.
There's something to think about when you're sitting up on the 34th floor saying, oh, I love this view.
So when you go to Indianapolis this weekend with your lovely bride.
I'll be on the 8th floor.
The 8th floor. I thought I only get
you know, this ain't no lie to me. No, we went to Chicago one time. I forget what hotel we stayed at, but we were on the 44th floor.
Mm-hmm.
And this was not long after 9/11. My cousin's a fireman. He told me, you know, once you get past the 11th floor, we can't do anything for you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's where our ladder trucks will reach. We can't do anything.
Right.
I made him put me down on the 10th floor, Timmy.
Ah, it was smart.
Down on the 10th floor. Smart move, Timmy.
So you're this weekend, you'll be in a lower level so you can get out in the event. Well, you know, remember when we talked about Colonel Tom Thumb and his wife, they were in a hotel fire. And they
now,
were saved,
luckily, they could run under the smoke.
They did get out. They lived and survived. But, you know, hotel fires is a – I mean, not that they're not a big deal now, but back in the day, they were even more – you know, it was even more of a problem. And so it was important to the Wyckoffs that their hotel that they're building was fireproofed because they just went through this – you know, this terrible, horrific fire of their own house. So they moved into this hotel that they just built for safety reasons. They thought it was modern and, you know, they'd be safe there. Now, the Wyckoff, as I said, the hotel was the tallest building in downtown Atlanta at the time. At the time it was built. And became the place to stay in the Georgia capital. And although the Wyckoffs eventually sold the hotel, They remain living in a suite at the hotel, even past the fire. But they moved down to the 11th floor, Colonel, so they did learn something. Now, 1946, of course, was the year following the conclusion of World War II, and much excitement filled the emotions of the citizens of Atlanta as Christmas approached. First holiday with the guys back from the war, guys and ladies.
Christmas in Atlanta is just beautiful to me.
Yeah, it's warm, too. Yeah. The citizens of Atlanta were preparing for the observance of the fifth anniversary of Pearl Harbor Day.
Which is the Colonel's birthday.
Exactly, a date that will live in infamy. Mm-hmm. So in the early hours of December the 7th, now, the fire would catch many of the hotel guests and employees by surprise. They would be asleep when it occurred. So, you know, we had Pearl Harbor disaster. We had the Wyckoff Hotel disaster. Both happened on December 7th. And you were born on December 7th.
Well, these weren't all the same day. I mean, I was born a few years after this fire.
But well, but I'm just saying, they're all three.
Yeah, on December 7th. Not all, a good day, Timmy. Not a good
all three day. Were disasters. Yeah. Some of the, there were 280 guests in the hotel on Friday evening, December the 6th, 1946, including a large number of teenagers from across the state of Georgia. They were in town to attend the annual youth assembly at the Georgia State Capitol that was being sponsored by the YMCA. So a lot of kids in this hotel. So make this fire even more tragic. The fire was first noticed about 3:15 a.m. by a bellboy who had gone to the fifth floor to help a guest, and the bellboy got trapped. However, the first and only call to the fire department was made at 3:42 a.m. by the night manager, who reported to have attempted to warn the guests by telephone of the fire. Because, you know, it's happened in the middle of the night. So how do you notify people? You know what I mean? It's they didn't have fire alarms. Yeah, so he was trying to call everyone's room and warn them when they seen this fire break out. So I'm sorry, they did have a fire alarm, but it was not sounded. Although by the time people became aware that there were a fire, there was no escape, especially for the upper floors. The fire department was just two blocks away from the Wyckoff. The firemen responded quickly and arrived at the hotel within 2 minutes of receiving the call. But by that time, by the time the fire department, you know, traveled those two blocks, people were already jumping from the windows. It had to be a horrific thing to see in the middle of the night, and people are jumping to their death.
Well, you remember we did the Brenda Spencer story?
Yeah.
And then the Boomtown Rats came out with that song, I Don't Like Mondays.
Yes.
And then this fire, there was another song that came about that. It was, you remember the Weather Girls, Timmy? That song? It's Raining Men?
So you're saying it's, okay. I was thinking
we're
this.
We're going to get some complaints on that
yes,
one,
we are. I think we are. We're going to get some bad reviews on that. I was thinking of, it seems similar to the story we did on the Triangle Shirtwaist
Fire, uh-huh. Shirtwaist Triangle Fire, yeah.
But so people started right away jumping to their deaths. The horrifying sound, the firefighters discovered dense smoke and flames emitting from the third, fourth, and fifth floors when they arrived. By the time they got there, just 2 minutes after being notified, the fire was already out of control. They could hear the horrifying sounds of trapped occupants echoing through the thick smoke high above Peachtree Street. And you know, if you look up photographs. Actually, and we'll talk about this in a bit. One of the guys that showed up had a camera and took a picture. Famous picture of a woman jumping from the fire, and it became, I think he won a Pulitzer Prize for it. We'll get to it in just a minute. I believe we discuss it. But anyway, the fire chief was a guy named Striden. He ordered his men to begin an immediate rescue effort with the ladders on the exterior, while an interior plan was deployed using the stairway to advance the hose lines up the stairway. So they're trying to douse it with fire from outside and also from inside. They're using ladders to climb up to get the people in that they can reach, and also firemen's inside going up the stairwells trying to get to those who are trapped. But much of the horror of firefighters, bodies begin to appear through the thick smoke above and violently plummet to the sidewalk on Peachtree Street.
Which is dangerous because, it's dangerous for the person plummeting, obviously.
Yeah, it's very dangerous for them.
For the firemen below, 9/11, I believe one or two firemen got killed like that.
Well, and the thing is, this was at nighttime, right?
Right, so you can't see them coming.
And there's a lot of black, thick black smoke, and you're just seeing.
And it's just.
They're hearing people just hit the sidewalk.
You just hear them.
What?
It reminds me of that WKRP where they threw the turkeys out of the
Yeah, room. Yeah.
But because in a fire like that, Timmy, people lose their heads. And they don't scream like four on the way down, like four.
Oh, yeah.
Or incoming or anything like that. So you don't know.
They should
land right on your damn head.
They could. So you're thinking they should be sighted?
I think there should be
some protocol.
Just common decency, Tim.
I'm coming or something.
Yeah.
Or,
look out below.
Yeah.
Just something. Just don't jump on people's heads.
So when all this was going on, so firefighters are there. They're trying to get the ladders up to the building. They're trying to rush inside. Thick black smoke. And, these people are just hitting the sidewalk all around them. A second and third. What?
It's not funny. Jimmy.
It is not funny. It would be terrible to see that. It would mess you up the rest of your life.
Yeah, it might mess you up more if the person didn't yell anything and they land on top of you.
Well, I bet they don't cover that in firefighter school.
I bet they do.
You think they do?
They do. Yeah, just like lifeguards, the most dangerous person is the person who drowned it because they panic and they drag you under people.
Yeah.
Try to save someone from a fire, they land right on your damn head.
Yeah, see, that's one of the risks. While all this was going on, a second and third alarm was sounded by Chief Striden at 3:44 a.m., summoning additional engines and ladders. As the magnitude of this event continued to reveal itself, a fourth alarm was sounded at 3:49. So it's a four-alarm fire at this point. And then they had a general alarm at 4:02, which I guess isn't up. A general alarm is like the worst, right?
Yeah.
It's like all hands.
Everybody.
Everybody hears
it, get out of here.
Yeah. And it calls for fire trucks from all over the area to report to the location. So all the Atlanta's firefighter, the different fire departments were called on to respond. And even off-duty personnel, when there's a general alarm, they're supposed to respond. So it's sort of like 9/11 in that sense, because it's kind of all hands on deck. As the aerial ladders were being raised to rescue the trapped occupants, floodlights were activated and directed toward the building, which revealed the panic-stricken faces of the people who were desperately pleading and waving for help while hanging from the windows of the room. Mm. Life nets were deployed and were held by firefighters, police officers, and just, citizens, civilians standing around on Peachtree Street. As soon as the nets were brought into place, falling bodies began to appear through the smoke, making a hard impact upon landing upon the canvas of the round white nets. In the confusion, more than one victim jumped on the same net at the same time. So they were jumping, trying to get in the, you know, they, it wasn't coordinated. Yeah. You know, there's, you know, really, it was, you know, it wasn't
they
like.
They don't break you. All good.
It wasn't synchronized jumping or anything. Yeah. That was the problem. They were jumping at the same time.
At the same time.
Yeah, and hitting each other.
Take a number.
Take an hour, yeah.
Wait your turn.
So when the bodies, I mean, and again, keep in mind, even though now they've got floodlights out in this building, they can't see very well because of the smoke, the people on the ground. So these bodies would just suddenly drop through the smoke. Firefighters climbing ladders and those working on the streets were in harm's way.
They get knocked off. And see, and I know people are going to complain. I know what you're going to say. You're victim blaming. No. No. Mm-hmm. These brave firemen are climbing up ladders, and like whack-a-mole, you're just knocking them right down off of it, Timmy.
Yeah, it was. Mm-hmm. It had to be pretty frightening. Firefighter by name of A.G. Burnham was struck, and here you go, Colonel, was struck and critically injured by a victim who fell or jumped from a window, while another firefighter had his coat torn off by a jumper who grabbed it as they fell through their death. So he's climbing up the ladder. And like you're saying, these guys are jumping. They're just reaching out, trying to grab anyone. Almost pulled this guy off the ladder, but pulled his coat off.
Right.
Okay.
No
so,
concern whatsoever.
Well, they may have had concern, but, you know, they were probably not thinking. They weren't probably following jumper protocol there.
They were not.
Yeah. Because, you know, if you go to a hotel, the back of your door, there's a
it
little
tells you exactly where what
they
to do.
Where the yeah. exits are at. And mm-hmm. if you look at, you know, you got that little book in your right. hotel. Every hotel room has that little book.
If those people would have followed it, they would have been.
If
fine.
They had followed, they
jump
probably
one at a time.
Yes, and one, do not
if you gotta jump
and scream.
Scream
yep. when you're coming
Take
down.
The firemen some
do
notice.
Do not grab at firemen as you're going falling
on
down.
Way down.
Right.
That's gotta suck. Somebody coming from 30 floors up, just grabbing a hold of you on the way down.
I know it has. It had to be a nightmare. All right, so these nets were designed for trapped occupants to leap to safety, but from lower floors, right? They weren't designed for people to jump from the 12th floor or whatever, right? It wasn't, they weren't, these nets were set up for people to jump from lower floors of multi-story buildings. The majority of Atlanta's air ladders, this gets to your point, Colonel, were 55 to 85 feet in length. With the longest on the scene being 100 feet ladders. Yeah. So I guess to your point where they can only go up so far, right?
Yeah, they're only getting to the 10th, 11th floor.
The trapped occupants, well, in this case, it was only the 8th floor. The trapped occupants above the 8th floor had no hope of being rescued by the firefighters using the ladders. So the fire breaks out, what I say, 4th, 5th, 6th floors, and those above that, they're pretty much screwed, anyone above the 8th floor. While some occupants continue to jump, hoping to land in one of the nets, others began to tie bed sheets together. See, you know, that's just something you see on Leave It to Beaver when he's sneaking out at night.
Yeah.
So they begin to tie bed sheets together for the purpose of making makeshift ropes to climb down, or they were just trying to climb down to the nearest ladder. So say they the ladders go up to the 8th floor and they're on 11, so they're making these bed sheets trying to lower themselves down to the 8th floor to get a ladder. One of the more creative ones succeeded in climbing down the ropes to the ladder, while others, I'd probably jump. They were engaged in desperate effort, but they were climbing down these, hoisting themselves down on these bed sheets, these ropes that they made. They were some that lost their grip and it fell.
If they knew parkour like the Colonel, Timmy,
mm-hmm.
they could have done some Matrix stuff and got out of that building.
You think you'd been okay?
I'd just run down the side of the building, Timmy.
You mean like Spider-Man?
Mm-hmm.
I see.
Thing to do, if you're ever in a fire like that with a flat building, Timmy,
mm-hmm.
is what you do is you hang from one ledge.
Okay.
And then you drop. And on your way down, you catch the next ledge, Timmy.
Is it just like that? Is it really
easy? And then you catch the next ledge, Timmy. I was never in a fire like that, Timmy, one time, but I was in a place that had a very bad bed bug outbreak.
Oh, I see. And you so you shimmy down the building.
I basically just dropped 10 feet at a time.
Oh, I see. And how far, how tall was that building?
It was probably 8 feet.
Okay. I see. Well, this was a little bit. Bit more than that. Okay, so you know, so all these spectators are out on the street by this point, right? They're watching this nightmare.
Get popcorn.
Oh, I mean, you know,
this guy's walking around Bud Light here.
Yeah, I mean, it had to be terrible to watch. Several of the nets were destroyed as the victims jumped from the upper floors, mm-hmm. and they came down with so much force. That they ripped the nets apart.
Oh, yeah. Ugh. It's called velocity, people.
Just physics.
Yeah, just physics. Bill Nye, the science guy.
It's believed that two sisters who jumped from the 9th floor window, each of them received a fractured spine, by the way, may very well be among the only victims ever to have jumped into a life net and survived from such an incredible height. So these two survived, but
they don't impress me. We just did one on a woman that fell, 30,000 feet from a plane?
That's true. Lawn Chair Larry, who flew.
Lawn Chair Larry. He ended up getting killed, didn't he?
Well, he died. He killed himself, yeah.
Not to go off topic to me, but no,
we would never want
to
do that.
Yeah, we don't like to do it.
Yeah.
The Southwest plane that blew up.
Earlier this week, yeah. And the lady was blown out the window.
The lady was blown out the window. Yeah. You know what I'm wondering, Timmy?
What? Was she blown all the way out the window? Yeah, or?
I think so. I don't know, but my only guess, because those are tiny windows.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because it had to be like a Russian gymnast or something.
I don't know if
the suction's powerful probably enough to take a normal sized person. Just
I'm not sure if she went all the way through or not. I never got that part of the story. But
did you hear the woman pilot talking?
Yeah, she was cool.
We just have no fire, just piece of our plane's missing.
Yeah, she
I'd have been screaming like, she's my goddamn calm. Plane's gone.
I would have too. I'd have screamed.
I'm going to need some medical personnel on the right.
She was very calm and collected, that's for sure.
Well, you know, there's a theory mm-hmm. that people like her are actually defective to me.
They're defective?
Yeah. It's no truth. Like Navy SEALs, uh-huh. people like that. Normal people have this flight or fight response.
Right.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
They think theirs is very inhibited, so they can face those kind of moments and stay calm, mm-hmm. where it's like a genetic thing, where they can face those moments and stay calm,
uh-huh.
where you and I, You know, we'd be looking for parachutes. Fuck these people on a plane. I'm getting off here.
I experienced the flight or flight syndrome. There's no fight to it.
I just experienced the, I'm just going to sit here somewhere. I hope no bad shit happens to me here, but I'm not really moving.
Yeah, she was. She kept it together pretty well. Yeah.
I mean, Sully was pretty badass.
Yeah.
But this woman was badass.
Well, he didn't lose his. I mean, he landed his plane right on the water, so that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
But, he didn't have, I guess she had to. It was part of the engine, wasn't it?
She was like, no fire, just part of the plane missing.
Yeah, I try not to think of that stuff when I'm flying. Okay, so anyway, where was I? So these sisters, they jumped down there from the ninth floor and landed. And like I said, you know, they believe that's the greatest distance anybody has ever jumped into one of those nets and survived.
I've seen trapeze people do more.
Have you? You think it should be like little East German judges down there that give them.
For the landing.
9.0.
You get points taken off if you hit a fireman down on
the land. Or your dismount.
Exactly.
They were inside the wine cough, inside the hotel, firefighters worked their way up a single open stairwell. So they only had one stairwell going up, which was situated in the center of the building. They encountered intense flames devouring the interior fixtures, wallpapers, furniture, and furniture on the third floor. So it's third
floor. The fire-resistant furniture.
Yeah, I guess the fire started on the third. We'll get into that when we talk about the causes. As they struggled to maneuver their hose lines in place on the stairwell, with all that pressure from that water, which is not easy, probably wouldn't be easy to do. The fierce flames above them created a vertical tunnel. So they got this. They're trying to put out this flame. This flame is kind of shooting back at them. So
backdraft, Timmy.
Yeah,
backdraft.
Exactly. Here, the firefighters began an interior attack on the fire, while having to endure the blistering heat and thick, choking smoke, which was forcing the occupants above them to jump to their death. Their assignment was extremely difficult, having to advance upon the flames with the hose streams while carefully climbing the smoke-filled stairway one step at a time. And firefighters, man. I tell you what, they might not...
Oh, man.
They go a long time, they have a lot of downtime, but when they're fucking working, it's a scary fucking job.
If you was going to say to me, I'll pay you $1 million... $2 million a year to be a fireman, I couldn't do it.
Although they get laid a lot, man.
They do. And firemen. I still could not climb those ladders.
I know, but...
If you had Jessica Lange up at the top of a 30-foot ladder, Timmy, I couldn't climb up to her.
I would like to be a firefighter not really fight fires. I would like to be like
I just like to have the uniform.
Yeah,
ride on the truck and then jump off and
pick
up
women
fawn over me.
Yeah. That's what I want to.
The problem is you have... firemen are physical specimens.
You have to fight fires. That's the problem.
You do have to fight fires. And they're, they're known for their physical fitness.
Yes, yes.
So we would fit right in.
Yeah, I mean,
we could work those uniforms, too.
That's the thing, man. You have to be physically fit. You have to.
Yeah.
Get laid a lot, though. They make out like bandits.
Do. Yeah, you carry somebody out of a building.
Women like that.
They do.
Women like that. They like that sort of thing. Now, when the hose streams were being deployed, so they're trying to pull these hoses up the stairwell. The hoses began to become tangled, making it even more difficult. As soon as one hose line was extended to its full length, a hose clamp would be applied, shutting off the water supply with another length of a hose connected. So, I mean, it's a lot of work involved here. On the back side of the building, thick smoke filled a 10-foot-wide alley between the Winecoff Hotel and the 12-story mortgage guarantee building across the street on Ellis Street. So, I'll get into this, but some of the people were able to jump from building over to another building, survived. Here the scene was not unlike the one on Peachtree Street, with the exception there was no space in which to maneuver the outside ladders. So because of this building, it was so narrow, they couldn't get ladders up. And they could not see the victims hanging from the windows because of the thick smoke. However, the firemen could hear them calling out for help. So, yeah, it's not a good scene at all. So now the occupants were dropping their suitcases and other items from the windows to the alley below in an attempt to get the attention of the firefighters. Well, I guess it would get your attention if a suitcase landed on your head. Shortly, bodies began to drop through the smoke in the alley and crash upon the ground of the small alley. So it was a nightmare, man. One guest, 32-year-old Jimmy Cahill, escaped death from his room at the Winecoff by climbing down an area ladder, then having rushed around to the entrance of the Guarantee building, which was across the alley. He sprinted up the stairs, used a painter's walkboard to form a bridge between the two buildings. So that's a smart thing, Colonel. Now, this guy was cool because he was from Albany, Georgia. That was not why he was cool, but he was cool because he had just got back from the military. He was a pilot from a he was a pilot during the war, and he piloted a B-25 bomber. So it was cool. This was like another mission for him. Anyway, he saved his mother from the Winecoff Hotel. So he runs across the alley, gets in this other building, runs up the stairs to this roof, gets this painter's scaff and walkboard and places it across the building, and he got some people off that way, which is pretty cool. And now while this is going on, other neighboring fire departments, firefighters and fire trucks, they start showing up. In addition to the out of town fire companies, ambulances were required to rush the injured to Grady Hospital and other hospitals in the area, where the attendants, upon completion of delivering the injured victims, quickly rushed back to the Winecoff to retrieve more victims. With the number of dead continuing to rise, undertakers from area funeral homes were summoned to take charge of the body. The fire continued to intensify within the building as the dark, thick smoke began to push from the windows with ever-increasing velocity. Along with the upsurge of momentum of the smoke, bursts of orange flames began to appear within the smoke coming from the windows, followed by a flashover, which occurred with a mighty blast. So now they're fucking things exploding. Multiple floors burst into flames all at once, and the orange glow illuminated the surrounding buildings, with this amber-like glow. Firefighters directed streams of water from aerial ladders to the upper floors as best they could, while firefighters inside the stairways continue to battle their way up the stairways. These fucking firemen a lot of these firemen are inside the building still fighting this thing when this shit's exploding. And fire streams were directed upon Winecoff from the windows of adjacent buildings, firefighters having advanced hose lines there to gain the advantage of the elevated position. So they're bringing in hoses and running them through neighboring buildings around this fucking place. For the next 2 hours, they would battle flames raging the interior of the Winecoff, which now was closely resembled a blazing brick furnace. I mean, this had to be horrific. Collectively, the firefighters finally brought the fire under control just before dawn. I remember, this thing started like at 3:14 in the morning. At first light on a Saturday morning, the brick of the smoldering hulk of the 15-story building was scorched and blackened with covering soot from the deadly smoke. But it was fireproof. Soot-stained white sheets tied together by the occupants for the purpose of their makeshift ropes dangled from the window ledges, a testament of their desperation of those who once occupied the popular hotel. Firefighters had already begun to bring out some of the victims who were unable to escape from their rooms. fire apparatus filled Peachtree Street, along with every increasing throng of spectators who had gathered to observe this tragic scene for themselves. Hearses lined secondary streets, awaiting the remains of victims being removed from the building. With Grady's Hospital, Grady's Hospital's morgue being filled to capacity early in the morning, the remaining victims had to be transported to area funeral homes until their family could perform the grim task of searching for and identifying their bodies. In all, 119 people had been killed, Colonel, and over 100 others injured. Among this number were 40 teenagers. Remember, they were in town for the youth assembly. 40 teenagers were dead. Among the dead were William Weinkauf. He was the owner, hotel builder, and namesake. He lived with his wife in the hotel in suite 1011 and then 1012 for 31 years. He was found dead in a nearby hallway. His wife, Grace, she died on the sidewalk of Peachtree Street. The couple who moved into this hotel 33 years earlier, because they were assured by builders that it was fireproof. Also were among the dead were Patricia Griffin. She was only 14 years old. She was daughter of Marvin Griffin, who would later go on to be the governor of Georgia. Who else was in this among the dead? Margaret Nichols. She was 30 years old. She was a one-time Miss Atlanta runner-up. She died falling from room number 720 to the alleyway behind the hotel. Elmer Cosnett, age 32, he was a Navy lieutenant commander, a highly decorated bomber pilot in World War II who just had recently returned from the Pacific in World War II. His service had just ended. Neil Sims, age 33, he was the president of the business and professional Nell Sims. She was the president of the Business and Professional Women's Association of Georgia. She climbed out of room 1504, so she was on a top floor. She slipped on a ledge and fell 15 stories, landing on the hood of a fire truck, and she broke her neck. Arnold Hardy, a 24-year-old Georgia Tech graduate student, an amateur photographer, won the 1947 Pulitzer Prize for photography when he captured the fall of victim Daisy McCumber from the building with his last flash bulb. Hardy had been coming from home from a dance. He heard sirens. He called the fire department to find out the location of the fire. And then following the fire, he appeared at the AP office with his images, three of which were unusable, but the one of McCumber falling, they purchased from him for $300. The photo would appear in newspapers and magazines around the world. And Daisy McCumber, fortunately, was one of the few jumpers who actually survived her fall. 32 engines, 5 aerial ladders, 6 service ladder trucks, and other support vehicles totaling 49 pieces of fire service apparatus responded to the Weinkauf Hotel fire. The cause of this tragic event remains a mystery to this day. Now, Colonel, in response to the fire, a National Conference of Fire Prevention was convened in 1947, because this was a big story, and it was convened in 1947 by U.S. President Harry S. Truman, and this would lead to increased safety measures and upgrade of local fire codes throughout the country. Although the cause of the fire was never determined, it was believed that it occurred on the third floor. One of the hotel's staff temporarily left a mattress in the third floor hallway. It's believed that someone carelessly tossed a cigarette that ignited the mattress, but there were no official conclusions regarding the cause of the fire after extensive investigations. The building was indeed fireproof as it was intended, in that it didn't, it didn't collapse. But it was fireproof based, as I said, on when it was that definition of when it was constructed in 1913, some 43 years earlier. The Winecoff fire stimulated debate concerning the enforcement of new fire code requirements for older properties. Until the rash of hotel fires in 1946, the Winecoff being the most prominent and most deadly, such legislation was regarded as unconstitutional, taking a property because you're retroactively applying enforcement standards, right? But that change, among the many lessons learned from the Winecoff hotel fire, were that interior furnishings were of ordinary combustible material. So despite the fact that the building was considered fireproof, the materials inside the building were very combustible. There was no automatic sprinkler system installed in the building. There was an absence of exterior fire escapes, which is, again, why people had to jump in a lot of the cases. There was an absence of installation of fire doors, which are now pretty standard. There was only one stairway for the entire building, leading only one means of egress. What was once the Winecoff Hotel building still stands today in Atlanta. It is now the Ellis Hotel in downtown Atlanta. Thousands of people pass the building each day with no knowledge of the tragic fire which claimed so many lives in 1946. There's only a historical marker to remind those who occasionally pause to read the story of this tragic event. So there you go, Colonel. That's the Winecoff Hotel fire. What are your final thoughts, if any?
My final thoughts, Timmy, is if you're going to jump off a building, have some common decency. Yell for the firemen. Give them a heads up.
So that's the only thing you take away from this disaster.
Well, and fire resistant does not mean fireproof, Timmy.
Okay. That's fair enough, Colonel.
I felt safe all these years with my children in fire-resistant pajamas.
Uh-huh.
I did not know it was not fireproof to me.
So your children are combustible?
Apparently.
Huh.
Apparently.
What do you think? Let's talk before we get into shout-outs, Colonel. I would like your thoughts, and we don't do this often enough, because, you know, we have a very active Facebook page.
Yeah.
History Dweebs, the podcast. And if you're not a member of that page, we ask that you join that group, because there are interesting people there. Now, I just mentioned that Leanne has lovely soft hair, but I would like your opinion on some of the people in the group that you would like to...
That I would like to touch her hair?
No, not necessarily touch her. That's just Leanne. I like to touch her hair. But I would like for you to talk about just what overall general impressions you have about some of the people in our group. You can name names if you like.
Well, I'm going to say Amber's probably the sweetest.
Amber Croup.
Yeah.
From West Virginia.
Because she's scarier than hell to me.
Does she scare you?
Absolutely. She terrifies me.
Okay. Who else?
Every night I check under my bed to make sure Amber's not there. Because I'm afraid that I said something on the page that offended her. She didn't tell me she's going to show up.
And she'd be there ready. She's a little stabby.
She's stabby. Callie?
Callie
makes
Jones.
Me scared.
Callie Jones.
Callie makes me scared.
And she's a ginger.
She's another ginger. Scares me to death. Of course, you know, we have my co-host from the other page, Shelly.
Shelly Garrett.
Shelly Garrett.
Who is with your other podcast, Rants and Reasons.
Rants and Reason. Here's what I found out about her, Timmy. Mm-hmm. She's a control freak.
She is. Why do you say that?
Because I was working on a Google document while she was working on it.
Uh-huh.
And I would type things in, and she would come back in behind me and erase them and eliminate them.
She was correcting you.
Yeah. I mean, what kind of person does that to me? Who does that?
Well, someone who likes accuracy. What do you think of your thoughts on Mike Sadler?
Mike Sadler's a good guy. I'll tell you one of my favorites, though, Timmy.
Okay.
One of my favorites. Of course, you got Clark.
Clark. And Nicholas West.
Nicholas, and Stephen Potts.
You like Stephen?
I like Stephen because Stephen has just got this thing going on that, you know what? I got two twin girls. I don't give a shit about the rest of the world. I got twin girls that I'm trying to deal with.
That's a lot.
The rest of the world
is
going to have to wait. You know, so that's...
And we got our good friend Karen Barnes.
We love Karen Barnes, and we love Shirley. You know what? I'm going to get into his shout-outs here real quick, too.
Okay, well, let's first... Let me say, we thank all of you for supporting us on Patreon. Mm-hmm. If you would like to support us on Patreon, just go to patreon.com/historydweebs, where you can give a little, you can give a lot, or...
It's just a wee little bit to me.
And the Colonel is going to give a shout-out to all the wonderful people who support us on Patreon.
Of course, we got Ben D.
Yes, Ben, good guy. Yep. We left him off the last couple of lists. Yep. We apologize for that, Brent.
Gyro, James Seabright, Tommy Lane, Jason Dykes, Terry Stafford, my co-host Shelley.
Terry has a alter ego.
Does he? Oh, that's Malachi.
Yes.
Yeah. My lovely co-host, Shelley Garrett, Bridget Clavey, Brandy McBride, Jennifer Svoda, Maggie Glover, Mike Sadler, who we just mentioned, Jamie Demp, lovely Maja, Tyrone, Amber Scoville, Marsha Boris, Stace Alsop, Jody and Sean Wells, Amber Anderson, Ben and Roseanne from They Walk Among Us.
Here. Ben and Roseanne, who we're going to meet later in September. Also, Colonel, we should mention that WeebCon 2 is being planned as we speak.
It is.
Anon is working hard on that as well as others. And we don't have a date yet, but it's probably late September, early October. We'd love to see you here in Cincinnati for WeebCon 2, The Wrath of Brandy.
That's right. Oh, no. Well, Lorna Violet, Mike Deo, Kelly Charette, Karen Widener, Callie, the beautiful Callie, Lauren Meredith, Jessica Greeno, Pleasing Terrors, of course, Timmy.
Yep, Mike Brown.
Yep. LK, and I never get her name right, Anute.
Okay.
Reen, Ursula, Marissa Albanese, Sarah Bloom, Amber Krupp, The Now History with Jeff. Now you know History who, America know, podcast.
Oh, yes.
No, I got Jeff's Backroads of History. This is Joe.
Oh, Joe Hopkins.
Joe Hopkins, Now America.
Uh-huh.
Catherine Cockeridge Richardson.
She needs to work on that middle name.
Yeah.
You know who Ursula is? It's a Linick.
Oh, is it?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Ursula's
Fiona,
running.
The World Traveler Crisp.
Yes.
Laura yeah. O'Reilly, Christine Bourgeois, Aaron, Kimberly Cameron.
The attorney.
Attorney at law.
Yes.
Elise, History Goes Bump with Diane Student. We got... The Ransom Reason podcast that sponsors us, Timmy.
Yes.
This show brought to you by Ransom Reason.
Yes, Timmy. They're very generous in their donations, and we thank them. If you like politics, check out Ransom Reasons on iTunes.
Jahara, mm-hmm. Alicia and Chip, Marika Smith, and of course, now we got Jeff and Dom from Backroads to History.
And Poems by Jeff.
Poems by Jeff. Jeff's just... He's a goddamn dapper man, Timmy.
He wears a lot of different kind of socks.
He does.
He has some sporty socks.
He does. We got Karen Barnes, Rachel Flynn. Let's see. Karen Barnes, Rachel. Shirley. Squirrely Shirley.
Shirley Strapp from Canada.
Todd Long, Lydia Fisher, Phyllis Munson, Melissa Montoya, Christine Malachinsky, Paula Kimes, Per Westman, Amanda Christine.
You know, we've left Paula off last couple times,
yeah,
too. So
we have, Paula. We apologize. We love having you in the
Pear?
Group, too.
Is it Pear or Per?
Per Westman.
Per. We're sorry we left you off a couple times. So we have, if we missed you, we're getting it together. We're
trying to get it together here. Yeah. The devil ain't here to fuck things up. I'm doing this one.
Yes.
Amanda Christine, Heather Poole, Adam McWaters, The Vanish Podcast, Timmy.
With Marissa Jones.
Yeah, and the podcaster with the greatest teeth in the business.
Who's that?
That will be Christy Lee from Canadian True Crime.
Yes. What about our friend Nina from
She's a lovely woman, Timmy.
She is.
Quite a lovely woman.
We're hoping that she'll be back.
We've been scary too, though, Timmy.
We're hoping that she'll join us for...
I certainly hope so.
WeebCon 2. She was at the last WeebCon event.
Yeah. Now we got Insight. Yes. Charlie and Allie from Insight.
Our good friends, Charlie and Allie.
Mistress Vader. Ron Monasterio, Tracy Smith, Jess, John B., Nene, Bridget Bernard, Stacy, Christine Howell, Cheryl Weld, Nicholas, Ryan, Margaret McDonald, Aaron Turner, Michelle Johns, Clark and Diane Tobridge.
Hey, Clark.
Tobridge. Clark out there shooting squirrels. Well, What's wrong with you, Clark?
Well, Shirley will be upset about that, but Clark should be here for DweebCon.
He will be here for DweebCon.
Yes, that's exciting.
Can't wait to see him again. Beth Wallen. Andrew Scammell, Michaela Wallstrom, Aaron Fowler, Leanne Flanagan.
The lovely Leanne Flanagan with her hair.
Marissa.
Yes, Marissa.
Albanese.
Yeah, Marissa, thank you.
Lady Beverly.
Yes.
Rudy.
The Wonder Dog.
The world's most dangerous canine.
I saw you post that picture of him with his bandana.
Little do-rag on.
Yeah.
Yeah, with the little skulls on it.
Yeah, he looked very sharp.
He was going hard, Demi.
Yes, it looks like I thought he might have joined, the Sons of Anarchy or something.
The
puppies
motorcycle.
Of Anarchy,
yeah.
Does he?
Yeah. Yeah, the canines of Anarchy.
Yeah.
And, of course, the woman we do this show for, Timmy, week after week after week after week, Dottie Scott.
Yes, and she is, and she likes this podcast, and she also likes Deadball. Would like for us to do more Deadball. So we will do that, Mom. Thank you all for joining us, and we'll see you next time on History Dweebs. Bye, everyone.
Bye, everyone. Good day.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.